Labor Day weekend, close out summer, football right around the corner, big college football weekend, highlighted by a couple games, LSU-Clemson obviously being one of them, and then the big one tomorrow night between Ohio State and Texas, and NFL football, amazingly enough, gets going in 6 days. Bayside we go. It's Mark. It's the fan. What's going on, Mark?
Oh, hi, Mark. How you doing today?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Great. I got, since you were talking about Boggs earlier, I got a couple of great stories. I met Gay Paul way back when I worked in Macy's going to college in 77, and I also met Steinbrenner once. I'd like to tell you real quickly what happened. I met Gay Paul. I worked for Macy's at the time, and a woman comes up to me at the counter. So she said, so I said, gee, is that the Yankee interlocking NY? It was NY with diamonds. It looked beautiful. She says, oh, you must know my husband. I almost fainted. It was Gay Paul walks up to the counter. He says, are you going to Yankee Stadium in the spring? I said, I was at the game when Chambliss hit the home run. This is in January of 77. So I said, yes, I was at that game. I'm a big fan. And he says, just keep on coming. I was in shock. Now, Steinbrenner, I had a girlfriend named Barbara, and she says, Mark, I'd like to get into the stadium club. Mm. This is in 1990. She says, could you ask that man if he could go in? That's George Steinbrenner. He's the owner of the Yankees. He's not going to let me in. I'm not even wearing a sports jacket. You know, back then you had to wear a jacket to go into the stadium club. So I went up to George. I said, George, my girlfriend would like to walk around in the club. I said, Mr. Steinbrenner, actually, would you let me go in? He says, well, listen, now how many games do you go to a year? I go to about 15, 20 games a year. So I tell you what, you go in, look around. I said, I don't have a sports jacket. Hey, don't worry about it. Just go in, walk around, enjoy yourself, have a great time. I love fans like you. You can go in and enjoy yourself.
Okay.
And I thought that was incredible. So I just wanted to share that with you.
That's cool that you got into the club. You know, I didn't, yeah. When I was working stock at Sears, I never ran into anybody. I gotta be honest with you. Loaded a lot of TVs, a lot of air conditioners. At one point in time, somebody bought a snowblower. It wasn't Mike. But somebody bought a snowblower in Nanuet, New York, and had to load that into the car. What was amazing when, just because I didn't have the pleasure of meeting Gay Paul, but that's cool when you're working at Macy's. But the people that always, when I was working stock, and you get the call and get the ticket, they always came with a car that could never fit the item that they bought. And they'd want you to basically lasso it down with a lot of rope in order to make sure that they could get it home. That was always the thing. It wasn't like they came with like a flatbed truck or anything like that. It was like, you know, they buy a, you know, in those times it was not the flat screen TVs. I'm dating myself. Like the TVs were like 450 pounds and you have to lift them up, put the back brace on, put into the car, hopefully not snap off the antenna and then get the rope out. But when I was working at Sears, then really, I mean, I met a lot of nice people, just nobody of influence like Gay Paul or nobody, general manager did not walk in. Looking to get, you know, a new TV or something. Anyway, BT and Sal Show on the Fan, brought to you by your Tri-State Cadillac dealers. Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the New York Mets. Jay in New Jersey is up next to the Fan. What's going on, Jay?
What's up, Moose? How are you, pal?
I'm doing well, Jay. I'm chatting with you. It's a Friday. We're in New York. All is well, man. How's North Jersey?
Everything's doing good. Just to touch a little football, where maybe come at this at a different angle, and maybe this is more of a Tiki question when he comes on. But signing contracts and doing everything, maybe a way to go at this in the future with all these dramas that you see is that it's just a straight-up four-year deal. Doesn't matter if you're first-rounder, second-rounder. Then if you talk with your team in that fourth year and do a new deal, that's fine. If not, they're allowed to franchise you only 1 year because you got these people that don't want to play on their final year of their contract. When contracts become meaningless, then what do we have a contract for? That's what I'm always, my mind boggles when these guys want to sit out. And I get it. They're protecting themselves. But if you sign a contract and you outperform your contract and you can't, you're trying to negotiate, you know, you still got to play on your contract. Like, if not, and you can't come to an agreement, what is the initial contract for then? It just always boggles my mind.
I get it, but usually it happens in the final year of whatever the deal is, when a player is superseding expectations or the player has the leverage, and whenever the player has the leverage, they're going to go out there and try and use it. It's a barbaric sport. Next play could be your last play. Micah Parsons goes out there and, you know, has a, you know, tears every ligament in his knee, and is done for the year. And when he comes back, he's no longer necessarily going to be the same player that he once was, right? So it's a depreciated asset. So players also go into it realizing that that is the case as well, right? The longevity, the length of their career, they're looking to, you know, financially make as much as they possibly can as quickly as they can, especially when they're a player of impact. So you could look at it that way, and you could say, well, if you sign your name to a contract, what's the use of it? Or you can look at it from a player's perspective and say, well, when I have leverage and I'm going to be able to use that leverage because I'm going to try and maximize my value because my ability to go out there and make money is not as long as the owner's is.
No, agreed with what you're saying. But, you know, when you sit with people and you're talking stuff out and you don't agree on something, you know, then it comes to the point of, then what are 50 years involved with first-rounders? Then the whole collective bargaining has to change. And then, hey, you want that 18th game? Well, we want 1 year only on franchising. Or we want four-year deals in the beginning when you get drafted. Like, you got to kind of prevent this because this is just always going to happen. And it's just drama that just it could be avoided, but it always happens, especially I'm a Cowboy guy. But you know what? This price of today was not the price a year ago, Jerry Jones. And if you're not willing to pay this, then move on from the player and don't bring out the drama. Like, that's the bottom line of all of this. And for Giant fans, guess what? He moves on, and I can guarantee you Cowboys won't be sweeping the Giants anymore. There's chance. And that's what it is. So all the Giant guys that kill me.
You're with your team, right? You know? But that's where your organization's got to have a little bit of vision as well to kind of get ahead of it and not create the headache or the drama that we saw down in Dallas. And listen, I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. I'm not necessarily buying everything that Mike has had to say, and I'm not necessarily buying everything that Stephen and Jerry Jones had to say. We'll see, I'm sure, more reporting on the fracturing of that relationship. A lot of people believe that something had to have gone wrong that led to the emotional decision by the Cowboys to move on from really one of the great pass rushers in the NFL, Eric in Long Island's up next on the Fan. But that's to the smiles of the New York Giants. What's going on, Eric?
Listen, just like the last caller, I'm one of the people that no one wants to hear from normally all year, the New York-based Dallas Cowboys fan. And here's where I disagree. I think, as wrong as he was, I think Jerry Jones, this is what I don't understand, had all the leverage. He was not a free agent. There was one more year on his deal than 2 years of franchise. He had 3 years of Micah Parsons at value dollar, and there's nothing Micah could have done about it. Let me ask you, if there's no trade here, if this trade never happens, how does this play out? Micah plays 3 years with the Cowboys. He's not going to sit out and not make $75, $80 million. I don't understand what the incentive was for the Cowboys to do this deal. Jerry Jones had the leverage here, not Micah Parsons.
Unless they felt like it was going to be too big of a headache to deal with. Yeah, listen, you can look at it that way as well. Micah's not going to sit out. He's not going to be out. You know, what
kind of 3 years.
No, Eric, what kind of issue is that going to be in the locker room? What kind of issue is that going to be on a day-in, day-out basis? What issue is that going to be in terms of when Mike is hopping on and doing his podcast? What kind of negative, you know, is he going to, even as great as he is it not going to be worth the headache because we're going to have to be dealing with all of these other storylines that come along with it, with him not being a happy camper, being a Dallas Cowboy because I haven't paid him yet and giving them that financial security. Like, that comes into it, too. But you could have played hardball. Listen, the story came out yesterday that, you know, there was a last-ditch effort by Micah and his representative, and Jerry Jones basically told him, which he confirmed last night, which was, you know, you're playing under the 50-year deal. See you on the field.
It's crazy to me. I think that if there was no deal done, I don't think Micah would have not tried. I think for 3 years, for his teammates, he would have busted his tail. He would have played football. He wouldn't have gone out there and said, well, I'm not tackling him. For 3 years, you still would have had the best defensive player in football at bargain dollars. At bargain dollars for 3 years, there was no need to trade this guy. There was no need.
Well, the Cowboys differ, and they want to stop the run. So Kenny Clark's going to go out there and help him stop the run. Matt in Stanford's up next in the Fan. What's going on, Matt?
Hey, buddy. So, you know, I've been listening, driving down the Merritt Parkway, losing my tires as we go, basically. And, you know, again, I think the Cowboy fan, I thought they'd be a lot more angrier. But in all fairness, like, I think, you know what? They got two first-rounders. They got Kenny Clark. I don't believe he's a generational talent. A good buddy of mine who's a Northern New Jersey Cowboy fan, I heard his take earlier today. He doesn't really, he's like, hey, look, he's never played well in the big games. He's not Lawrence Taylor. So, I mean, look at it this way. They got 2-1s. They didn't give him what he wanted. Goodbye. And again, at the end of the day, I look at them as they still have a great offensive team. They're still going to, you know, with Lamb and even Pickens, Ferguson, you know, and Dak, again, he's playing with something to prove. So the NFL now, it comes down to offense. That's really what it comes down to. So, I'm not hurting for them as a Giant fan.
Well, as a Giant fan, Matt, you shouldn't be hurting for the Cowboys. Should be celebrating.
Yeah, I'm not hurting for the Cowboys. Hey, I'm not. Look, at the end of the day, we got to contend with the Washington Redskins. We got to contend with the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, look, as long as Howie Roseman is still there, they're gonna. I mean, again, that guy knows what he's doing. And until we figure it out this year. You know, there's nothing we can do about it. So,
well,
again,
the Giants
it's going to be
worry.
A tough division.
Matt, I get it's an offensive-driven league. There are still premium positions when you're looking at defense, corner and edge rushers, and the Cowboys moved on from one of them. So you can look at Kenny Clark and say, well, I love the 2 first-round draft choices. We don't have to allocate the finances. Dallas is going to be A-OK. They're going to be able to score points. Don't necessarily love the running back room. Do like Blue, the running back out of Texas, and think he's got speed as long as he stayed healthy. He had a little bit of a hamstring injury during training camp. Offensive line, not nearly what it once was. Cowboys better score a lot of points this year. Kevin in Jersey Shore is up next in the fan. What's going on, Kevin?
Hey, Moose. Thanks for taking my call. I think we have a friend in common, Huey from St. Louis.
Yes.
And his brother, Pat. They always. Yes. I speak to them occasionally. They're great sports fans. They always speak very highly of you.
No, he is great. And when you talk to, I haven't talked to you in a while. When you talk to him next, Kevin, send him my best, all right?
Absolutely. You know, I tell you, when he used to call Mike and the Mad Dog, they would treat him as like a scheduled guest. It was incredible the respect they gave him.
I would screen those calls, no doubt. Huey in St. Louis, absolutely.
a comment and a question. If you talk about Wade Boggs, as a Met fan, I know this is from a Met perspective, but I'll always view Wade Boggs as a Red Sox. Sorry, I don't care how many horses you rode around Yankee Stadium. He'll always be a Red Sox, and that's that. My question to you about football is, it's all great about Micah Parsons, but as a Giants fan, I'm very worried about Andrew Thomas. It doesn't look like he's going to start the season. And if he doesn't, Russell Wilson better look out. Your thoughts on that, Moose? Thanks for taking my call, and appreciate it.
Yeah, I'd be concerned about Thomas as well. I mean, I think he's the key to the offensive line. That's it. End of sentence. Period. End of sentence. End of paragraph. End of chapter. Move on from there. I mean, that's what you necessarily, when you look at Andrew Thomas and what he can provide along that offensive line, there's not another giant offensive lineman in the room that can do what he can do at the left tackle position. So I would agree with you. And if he's not there, that offensive line is significantly weakened. Anthony Piscataway up next to the fan. What's going on, Anthony?
What's going on, Moose? Thank you for taking my call. Mahala, I have some hot takes for you right now.
Hot takes.
Yeah, man, yo, I'm telling you. So I see a lot of similarities between the NBA and the NFL, right? Because same team, Dallas, they get rid of Luka Doncic, and everyone's like, "What are you doing?" They draft Cooper Flagg, and all of a sudden, everyone's like, "Wait, Dallas is now a contender if AD can stay healthy, Kyrie." So I'm looking at Micah. They get rid of him, yeah, but it's a gamble. It's kind of long-term investment, and they can maybe flip it around, and all of a sudden Dallas is back in, right? I don't think it was a terrible, terrible trade. It kind of all relies on the gamble, and this is really hot take.
Back in with what? The Mavericks won a lottery, and Pete, correct me if I'm wrong. I think they had a 1.5% chance of winning that lottery. I believe it was. There's no NFL draft lottery. So what are we?
Oh,
what are they back in for?
But I think if Dallas. I'm not thinking Archie Manning because, again, I don't know if he's going to leave that first year at Texas or anything, but even if they could pick up, like, a good quarterback, because Dak is a great quarterback, but I just don't think he fits Dallas. I've seen him go up and down, but no, I'm okay, Dad. And then, but real hot take is the Giants now have Dallas not to worry about as much, right? And we have seen a Giants team that went wild card. No one saw too much of them. And granted, I was 8 years old when this happened, so my memory may not serve me right. But no one was really worried about the Giants. They come into wild card. They beat Atlanta. Forgot who they played next. And then they beat a San Francisco team that everyone thought, everyone thought was going to make that Super Bowl. And then they go on to beat everyone thought an untouchable New England team.
They beat Dallas, Green Bay, and San
Francisco. Yeah. Oh, Green Bay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Dad.
So, yeah.
What's your dad's name, since he's adding to the call? What's your dad's name?
Pedro. He's a diehard Giants fan.
Hello, Pedro.
Hello.
It's Moose.
Huh?
Moose?
Yeah.
What's going on?
But, yeah, I think that the Giants, if they can make wild card, that's a team no one wants to face. And I would not be surprised if they make a surprisingly deep run. You know, I think Giants fans have really, they've been through it. My dad goes through it every single week. But I would not be surprised if you see them winning, upsetting these great teams. I don't think Minnesota is, like, easily beating the Giants. I don't think Green Bay, depending on what version of Jordan Love, is easily beating the New York Giants. They have an identity on defense. And if Thomas could stay healthy, the Giants have more protection. Malik Nabers, he had an amazing
season last season. Listen, half glass full. I get it. And you're right. I mean, the Giant fan has been through it a little bit. So I'm not as optimistic in terms of the Giants. And, you know, I think when you look at the NFC, you forgot the big team that's standing at the top of the mountain. That's the defending Super Bowl champs, and that is the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think the most interesting division is the NFC North, with you have now Parsons in Green Bay, even before that with the Packers, the Minnesota Vikings, which is McCarthy at quarterback, and obviously with the Detroit Lions, some regression along the offensive line, change of both coordinators, and Glenn and Johnson both being gone. And now you have Ben Johnson, and what is he going to do year two now with Caleb Williams, year one as a head coach? Then you get to the NFC South, and it's obviously the Buccaneers division to lose. There's not many that believe in Raheem Morris and the Atlanta Falcons, even though they went out there and addressed in the NFL draft their defensive line or edge rush issues. And then you go out west, and it's really San Francisco when you look at their, even though there's been a regression of the roster, the schedule is very, very easy when you're looking at the San Francisco 49ers. The Rams, I think, end up, if Stafford can stay upright, stay healthy, I think the Rams are a decidedly more dangerous team. But is there a team that scares you? Well, I mean, Philadelphia would scare you. I mean, they would. Thomas has got to stay healthy. I appreciate the optimism, I think, from you and your dad, Anthony. I think you should be optimistic about where the Giants as an organization are and the steps they've taken this offseason and how this roster is probably the best roster under general manager Joe Shane that he's taken to the regular season. That's a positive. Results-oriented business, though, and it gets going in what? Today's Friday, 9 days against the Commanders.